is a story all about how my life got flipped and upside down.
Okay, that's
something
enough.
Like that. Thank you very much. It gives me great pleasure to introduce this legend. He is best known for his work as Geoffrey, the snooty English butler in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. You would have also seen him in the film Cry Freedom, television shows like A Touch of Frost, Holby City, EastEnders, The Bold and the Beautiful, Brothers and Sisters, Desmond's, Empire Road, The Bill, In the House, Boom, Doctor Who, Juliet Bravo, Rumpel of the Bailey, to name but a few. He is currently in the play Radio Golf and is here in here live in the colourful radio studio. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joseph Marcel. Yay!
Good morning.
Good morning. It's so good to have you here. I
good
have to
morning
say,
to you. It's you good to be
look,
here.
I'll tell you what, you look the same.
Do I really?
Absolutely.
A little greyer, perhaps.
But gorgeous.
Oh, I like it. I like
yum.
It.
Does it feel like a million miles away since you did The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I can't walk down the road without anybody, you know, somebody reminding me of it, you know, that, what a phenomenon it is. But yes, it does feel a million miles away because, you know, we stopped doing that thing in 1996.
Do you know, it feels like just yesterday, really, because, you know, the continuous of reruns that we get.
Well, that's because it is, you know, there's never been anything like it or since. I mean, it is a phenomenon. You can see The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air twice a day in over 153 countries in this world that we're on.
Rightfully, you never have to work again, really.
That's what people tell me. I don't know about that.
Do you not get royalties from
it? I'll just get fat and, you know, kind of grey and... No, I think I have to work. My mind will die if I don't.
Yeah, that's the thing, though, isn't it? So, I mean, I am going to hang around there for just a little while. But for us, it was fantastic to see an English actor, you know, in this American sitcom. How did that whole thing come about?
Well, it was a long time coming. I got to say that. But it really came about with somebody seeing me in something that I'd been in America with, and remembering that they'd seen this guy with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and they thought perhaps this might be the person to do the part. And then somebody else saying, "Yes, well, I saw this, and I remember. Yes, let's see if we can find him." And the Royal Shakespeare Company saying, "Well, we don't have him anymore." And somebody saying, "Oh, well, he's actually at the Tricycle Theatre in Kilburn doing a play called Joe Turner's Come and Gone," which was my first August Wilson play.
Wow.
And they're asking me to do it. And so I had to put stuff on tape. And the people I'm talking about is Quincy Jones.
Wow.
And people like that, you know. And I put it on tape and they got it today and said they want me to do it again and can I approach it this way? And I did. And then they said, "Well, we want you in Los Angeles on Friday, like yesterday." And my agent saying, "Well, no, he's in a play. It's going to be on for the next week and he has to finish the play before he can go." And they're saying, "Well, we'll wait." And my arriving in Los Angeles, and everybody seemed to know me, and I didn't know anybody. And
that's
and,
amazing.
You know, kind of meeting Will and meeting the gang. And then, you know, that was it. And we did the presentation, and which was the pilot. And I came back to England, and I went to work for the BBC doing a play by Wole Soyinka, filming a play by Wole Soyinka called Madmen and Specialists up in Milton Keynes, you know. L.A. to Milton Keynes.
Fantastic.
And we're doing this thing. And then my agent called and said, "Darling, do you remember the thing that you did in America?" I said, "Yes." He said, "Well, I think they're going to go for a series. They want you there next week." So we finished this and I went. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Is history. So technically, from what you're actually saying to me, you were actually more of a star and more recognised than Will Smith himself back then.
Well, yes. I mean, I had a reputation as a very serious theatre actor. Yes, you know, I'd been on Broadway with the Royal Shakespeare Company, and I'd toured lots of American cities with the Royal Shakespeare Company. I'd also studied with a company in Lenox, Massachusetts, called Shakespeare and Company for a couple of summers, and I'd worked with a lot of American classical theatres as well as in Britain. So I had a kind of reputation as a reasonably reliable actor. But interestingly enough, I mean, we took a couple of plays, and one of them was directed by Patrick Stewart. You know, Dr. Jean-Luc Picard from The Enterprise.
Okay, yes. Yeah.
Next Star Trek, The Next Generation. So people saw that, you know. And I mean, I can't say that I had anything to do with it. I simply, the man upstairs did what he did, and I'm grateful. And it's been nice.
You've had a beautiful career, haven't you?
So far, and I have never forgotten, you know, the tricycle and you know what love I have for that place. And they're about the only place theatre that actually gives me work, that challenges me. So I'll be in Los Angeles, and Nick Kent will call me up and say, "You want to come and do this play?" I said, "Yeah, I'll come and do a play."
When you say that challenges you, what do you mean by that exactly? Because we take it for granted that you're, you know, for instance, can I hazard a guess?
Hazard.
All right. For instance, you've got Julia Roberts, who pretty much plays her the same character in everything she plays. And right. I would say that that's probably who she is, kind of.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
Are you saying that takes you out of your comfort zone, i.e.,
It treats me. He gives me work that treats me. He treats me as a creative artist. Work that challenges me. I mean, look at me. I'm not pretty.
I don't make 10 friends that would disagree with that.
I don't make 20 million a film and all that good stuff. But I mean, I have a brain. I have a mind that's still supple. And he offers me. You know, he suggests and offers me work that is not only about the great black artists who are alive, and God rest his soul, August, who's just passed, that helps me be the kind of actor that I want to be, you know, the Ira Aldridge of the modern day, or that kind of stuff. And it is the stuff that takes me out of myself, helps me to be creative, helps me to be imaginative. I'd gladly take the 20 million a film. I'll take it now. But until that time, yes, yeah.
That's wonderful, and I like the fact that you say until that time, because it means that, you know, that can happen for you.
Oh yes, yeah. I can't be bothered anyway. So
I can't be bothered. I was going to say, do you still? I mean, what was your ambition when you first started? What was it that you wanted to do as an actor?
Oh my lord, I simply wanted to. You know, you kind of start off and you think, well, I'll be in this big film. Oh, and then I'll get to sing a song, and that song will sell 200 million billion copies and I'll be rich. And then you begin to learn about your craft and what it requires. You learn about the business of acting. And you realize that, you know, it's not quite what people make it out to be, you know, the hype of it. And then you understand that it is, you know, a plumber learns to join pipes and to organize pipes and to make things work. An electrician does the same. A doctor does it. So you learn the craft of an actor. You learn, you know, the technique, the skills. You learn to read plays. You learn to speak plays. You learn to interact with your fellow actors. You learn, but most importantly, you learn to take direction, which is a very hard thing to take, you know, somebody telling you what to do. Mm. You learn all these things, and then the good stuff comes with that. But I really simply wanted to be a good actor. I mean, there'd been some amazing actors in my youth, you know, people like the late Norman Beaton, Thomas Baptiste. Oh my God, Edrich Connor, the later. I mean, there were these wonderful, great black actors which we don't hear about. And I was at the age of, as a young actor, where I kind of went, my God, these men are amazing. You know, so I wanted to be one of them.
One of them. Yeah. You are amazing. As you're speaking, you know, because I've got you in my ears, you're giving me palpitations. You are. Oh, it's lovely.
Can we have a fan for this lady, please?
I'm already skimpily dressed as it is. God, I've got an email here from Christina. Christina says, hi, Elaine. I hope you had a great weekend. I did. I'm still enjoying my weekend. Good to hear you and Jeffrey on the show. Calling you Jeffrey.
Everybody does. I mean, it's strange. I get on a bus sometimes, like, yo, G, what's up, man? hey, Jeff. No, it's not my name.
It's not my name.
And sometimes I get really cross because I'm thinking of things like, you know, oh God, I'm back in London now, so I'm going to have to go shopping. And I'm going to push. And somebody will say, can I have your autograph, please? And I go, what's my name? Which is a terrible thing to do. Yeah. And then I kind of went, oh my God, I mustn't do that.
No, you must.
And it's like, I'm sorry, I know the name of your character, but I don't know your name. And then I go into this long lecture about, that's the most important thing. You see, we, the black actors of this world, nobody remembers us. Nobody knows our name. I'm sure you can tell me who did this. Oh, please make a point of remembering our names, even if we speak one line. I'm thinking, all the person asked me for was an autograph. Why am I going into this? This huge homily about racial identity.
I think you're absolutely right. You are absolutely right. So, Christina, his name is Joseph Marcel. Get it right. But thank you for your email anyway. Shall I continue reading it?
Sorry, I
can just imagine you in the middle of Brixton Market or Sainsbury's. Yeah.
No, it's usually Shepherd's Bush Market. I go to buy my mangoes and things, you know. Or sometimes I go up to Harlesden.
Classic. I love it. And you know they'll be passing on that story.
Of course,
it's
yes.
Brilliant.
You know, somebody will stop you and say, now you really mustn't do we love you anyway.
Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, that's how I knew and that's how I'm going to call you.
Oh, it's brilliant. It feels like I have grown up with him. See, there you go. Oh, yeah. My favourite episode was when the one entitled Deaf Poetry Society, where Will has to learn a different form of lyrics. Yes. This show proves how great the 1990s were for having so many golden sitcoms, and this is definitely one of them.
It is one of my favourite episodes, not least for the fact that, you know, I played the poet Raphael de la Ghetto, who's just very cool. But also because it juxtaposed the charge of the Light Brigade, cannons to the right and rap, and you know, it was very, very good. I loved it. It was real wonderful, and I mean, I loved my, you know, kind of hamming it. I would go, cannons to the right of them, cannons, and then coming down as, you know, Raphael. So, man, what I'm gonna say to you, I got my thing. That's brilliant.
Still remember it all?
Well, I don't really. I kind of, you know, I have vague memories of, you know, I do have my favorites. I do. And my favorites are the ones where things go wrong, you know. Like,
go on.
Well, there's a wonderful one with, oh God, I've forgotten the name as I'm speaking. And I think it's in the outtakes. And you know, we were the first people to put outtakes.
The outtakes, shows, yeah. Oh, hilarious.
And that was the idea of a lady called Winifred Hervey-Stallworth, who was our executive producer, black lady. Three times Emmy Award winning, wonderful, amazing, just huge black talent in this world. And it was, what's her name? And there's been an earthquake. And Will is in a hotel with her, and I'm driving the family somewhere, and we're going to some big function, and everybody dressed. But anyway, they're having this thing, and Will's in the basement with her. And I shouldn't say this on morning radio, but it was funny. and something went wrong. And these are expensive costumes. I mean, you know, this is, you know, this is the business. And they're acting away. And her knickers fell down. The elastic just went. And I'm sure these things must have cost something like $300, you know. And I thought, that was the funniest thing in the world. It's in the outtakes. It's wonderful.
Oh, my God.
And it's like, and of course, Will, you know, was he didn't know, is this really happening? Is this a joke? And of course, she's... And Winifred, yeah, keep the cameras rolling. This is brilliant. This is, you know, this is impromptu.
Oh, my word. That's got to be the worst nightmare for an actor.
Well, for everybody. And you have to remember, there are about, you know, 150 people watching this scene. You are technicians, you know. And is this serious? Is this funny? Is this, what are we supposed to do? Are we supposed to laugh?
This is fantastic. And just talking about worst nightmares, do you have any, and have you overcome it now?
Oh, my God, you never overcome them.
Yeah.
I have them all the time. I mean, doing this play, Radio Golf, it's such a rapid pace that, you know, you have to be on it all the time and you can't afford to be distracted. But my worst nightmare was... I think it was my second job, and it was at Coventry, and there was this comedian night thing before stand up. I think it's 1970 or something. That's just before I went to the Royal Shakespeare Company, and we were doing a play called The Siege of Belgrade Castle, and in the Friday evenings, the actors were, and the crew would have this thing where you stood up and told jokes. And I'm never into this kind of impromptu stuff because I know I cannot do it. You know, like singing, I can't do it, so I don't get involved. Anyway, so I get to this joke, and you know, it's about 1 a.m, and you know, we've had a couple of pints and stuff, and my turn comes up, and I get on stage, you know, and I'm just 20, so I'm full of myself, arrogant, and I just tested up. Okay, so I'm going down the road. And I couldn't remember where I was.
Oh my God.
I couldn't remember what I was doing. I couldn't remember why I was there. Talk about embarrassment.
Oh.
Total thought, nope. I will never do that one again.
How did you get out of it? Did you?
But you know, guys say, "Oh, come on, get off the stage, you rubbish! Go on, get him off! Yeah, you call yourself an actor, get him off!"
Well, you know, it's obvious that that was just a blip, and it was meant to happen there and then. Because since then, it has never happened.
I've got no fingernails.
Listen, we've got to go up to that commercial break. But just before we go, and I was kind of like trailing you that, you know, you were coming on and there. And I said to Celine this morning, "Oh, I've got to speak like this."
Yes.
You know, because this is how, you know, Jovis speaks. We can't say ain't.
Ain't.
And all that kind of thing. So I was just wondering, you know, is this how you actually speak, or is this the public speak?
No, this is RP. This is you know, what my job requires. Mm. I can't...
What are you like at home when you're relaxed? I mean, do you have any kids?
Yes, I have a daughter. I have a daughter and a son, but my son's a big man now.
So when they were growing and you've kind of lost it, you've had to tell them 3 times to tidy up their room.
Oh, I slip. I go West Indian. I go Cockney.
Go on, give us a bit.
So much fun, yeah. Okay, I can give you a bit of patois, which is, you know, Saint Lucian.
Good.
Bonjour. Or I can do a bit of, you know, sort of, okay, little girl, nice to see you, nice one. I can do that, and I can, you know, I can slip in between, but I don't do Geoffrey, really. I don't. I mean, Geoffrey's you know, something else. So, I mean, sometimes people require it, but I you know, if that's what they want, that's what I want. But that's, Jeffrey's not me, you know, it's not me. This is me, you know, kind of.
Just relaxed,
RP, general. But, you know, if I need to be cop, no, you know, I could do that too. You know,
well, I have to tell you, people, crowd of people, you want to see me just lean back in the chair and cool like that. Trust me.
No, man, we're catching a lime, you know. The Trini, you know.
I'm loving it. Listen, it's Joseph Marcel in the studio. Some of you may know him better as Jeffrey in The Prince of Bel-Air.